Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, happy Thursday. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Zach. Boy, you just got right in there. I never, this was a little of me time, but that's great.
Go ahead. What do you have to say for yourself?
You know, I just wanted to welcome everybody to the show. I know, you were just so excited. That's why I enjoy having you on as a guest. And you were like a regular guest on How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes.
What does it take to be a regular? Irregular?
Being irregular. And I guess that's kind of our we were just talking before airtime. And, you know, the word mediocre came in. Let me just tell our listeners how they can participate if they want to ask a question, because this could be a very down and dirty show today, I have a feeling. So any listener that would love to join us live on our show, you can do so by dialing 347-857-2710. And we have a new format today. It's an hour format. And so let us begin with Zach Kleiman and the word?
Mediocre.
Mediocre.
Is that what you were talking about?
Yes, that's what we were talking about before we went on live today, is mediocrity a little bit.
It's been an amazingly common word on my tennis court for the last few years. People just hating being average.
Well, you know,
nice cough, Lauren.
I know, I've got this.
Where's your cough button?
No, I'm doing special effects today. Did you like that?
It's pretty mediocre.
I think I'm gonna. Okay, that's one. I'm gonna count how many times you use the word mediocre in this.
How many times I'm required to?
Well, you know, it's not about being average. I just don't like. There's such a negative connotation with that word. What about taking whether we're average or?
Well, we're growing.
Just say it's a practice. We're practicing. It's a practice.
Yeah, but who wants to practice? Everybody wants to be a master. Nobody wants to rehearse. They want to get to opening night.
Right, but it's not even a finality. Kind of that sounds like it's in a box. The practice is just that it's ongoing.
Yes.
That's the practice.
But because it is a practice, because we are constantly changing, both positively and negatively, and have to accept it at some point, we're always mediocre.
I don't know, but I know. I just don't like the way that sounds. Why should I have to be anything? It's just that's who we are at that point. And when we have that practice and learn new skills, then we, if you want to say, master that, and then. No, it's ever evolving.
It's on to the next job or on to the, going deeper into the game you're playing.
Exactly. But I don't think, I just don't like that it's mediocre. I mean, for me, that doesn't sit well for me. And you know my buttons. That's a button pusher. Oh, boy, the call board is flashing. Button pusher for mediocrity. But, hey, I mean, we can even say that's where the world is today. It's rather mediocre.
It's changing.
Yeah. So you mentioned that within the past, I don't know.
Almost everybody feels they have not reached their potential. And they have this fantasy or this idea that there's something better. And if there is something better or more than what they are, people are always feeling average or mediocre, or somewhere in the middle, and the deep search for more is constant. It's constant in my work. It's constant around me, and and I want to become a better teacher or a better writer or a better husband, whatever that is.
But can you do that, Mamie, if we were to
not
like,
say the word mediocre? Is that 15?
Well, no. That if we were to like or love ourselves where we are in our life, that search would have a different meaning.
So if we appreciate where we are now, the search, I think, for most people becomes easier.
Easier, and there's not that...
the Lauren stigma?
Thank you. That's now on sale at Blog Talk Radio. Dial now for Lauren Stigma.
I had an 11-year-old girl.
With the Lauren Stigma?
Last year, she had the Lauren Stigma. She wanted to work on something, but she didn't want to pick what she would work on the tennis court. And she asked me to pick. Nice second cough.
Thank you.
You count
Thank
the
you.
Mediocres, I'll count the coughs. And she said she wanted me to pick what to work on, and I said I'd really like to work on being mediocre. And she started to cry. She's going, I am not mediocre. I said, you are mediocre. You're 11 years old, and you're 15. You're going to be taller and stronger, and you will look back on 11 and say, gee, that was mediocre. So she started to hit some tennis balls, and she said, I will try to be mediocre, after she stopped crying. And she hit her first shot, hit solidly on the strings, went over the net, almost hit me, and she smiled and she said, that was good.
I think because she almost hit you for calling her mediocre.
And she started to have fun with it. She realized that she could get better, and the word there was, she took the Lauren stigma off mediocre. Mediocre just became a description and rather than a judgment.
I think that's the key, and I know you often tell me about word choice. Like I've given the word should to a friend to hold. I'm never using it. I just lost my train of thought. That's what happens.
Words, the use of words.
Should. I guess mediocre, I guess my point was mediocre is a certain word choice. That's maybe uncomfortable for me, and maybe for a lot of people, because society pushes us to, you can be the best. Everything is the best, the most beautiful. You're the thinnest. You're the prettiest. You're the ist. Everything has to be the ist.
The superlatives, yes.
So we can't. The society is not allowing us, you know, Lauren and Zach, to be just great as who we are. We're not good enough. And so you hear that in school. Oh, you know, Lauren, you didn't play soccer good enough than your older brother. So there's always that no one is validating us as who we are with our wonderful gifts and qualities.
Or our average gifts.
Or, yeah, but why do they? They're just who we are. I don't know. We're going to go. I'm going to go to the grave with this mediocre. She was just mediocre. You know, for the Oscars that are coming up. And now, for the best mediocre performance, there should be an Oscar for that.
Who was your favorite mediocre performance of the year?
My favorite female mediocre performance was Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side. I thought she was wonderful. I love her. She's a wonderful actress. I don't think she gets a lot of kudos. She goes under the radar a little bit. For whatever reason.
She's so likable.
She is, and she's wonderful with physical comedy. I'm not a big physical comedy slapstick like the Three Stooges, but she has that wonderful gift of comic timing, and she's just fabulous. So I think she's the best mediocre actress this year. I love using it now. Look what you've done. You've converted me. I'm going to use mediocre again.
Well, a few months ago, maybe even a year ago, I stopped using potential. This is what it is. Let's pretend there is no potential. This is your last shot you can take, and that's it. And how are you going to play it? This is your last radio show.
Well, you let it all go. You don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You throw caution to the wind. Who cares?
Right.
I mean, that would be, I mean, after years of caring what other people think, and people are going to think whatever they think. You can't help that.
Yes, but do I want to live in that universe of being obliged to other people's opinions, or know that I'm not an evil person and that I can be much freer? I don't have to compromise my freedom because I'm afraid of what other people think if I'm average.
Yes.
Or opinionated.
Well, I want to, you know, tell people also that you gave me a very special gift this, not for Christmas, around the holiday, but in January, you gave me freedom as a gift, and that was a wonderful gift, and I just want to say that people can get freedom from you. it's not an easy gift to get, but it's worth it.
And how did that manifest?
It manifested just like the question you posed to me. If this were the last radio show, we threw out the word potential.
Mm-hmm.
How would I fly? And it was freeing. It was just wow, as if someone took the chains off. Someone took those shoulds and the have tos of a certain sense of responsibility. Excuse me. I'm getting over a bad impression of Lauren Bacall. So
A mediocre impression
of Lauren Bacall. Actually, my namesake. But it was just an unleashing. I could just feel like Ichabod Crane or that the ghost of Christmas Past with those heavy chains that one carries around. I just felt you had that key. You anointed me, and you said, here's the key to freedom, and you unlocked it. And wow.
I thought you unlocked it.
I did, but you did something that we weren't even in the same room at the time that this happened. You just anointed me. You did your, you know, the voodoo that you do so well, and boom, I had freedom. And boy, I was flying. I was really flying.
I asked one guy to take the brakes off, sort of the same image, but just take the brakes off and see what it's like to play. Whether, I think he was going up for an audition for a part or playing a tennis match. I'm not sure what the goal was, but just take the brakes off. And he was really free for about 35, 40 minutes. And then I saw the brakes come back on, and I said to him, it looks like the brakes are coming on, and he shook his head no. And he said, the brakes are not coming on. I said, well, what's stopping you? He says, well, there is an emergency brake. And he said, he always needed something to hold him back. And he didn't get what he wanted. He just wouldn't.
Well, can you share what is that a way to self-sabotage something that holds him back so he doesn't succeed and feel the freedom or whatever it is he's
scary. I've known him many years, and he said that it was scary to succeed. And I don't think he used the word self-sabotage, but he just constantly said that he just was really uncomfortable in that realm where he felt out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And being in familiar territory was much more in control for him, so he liked the idea for about 35 minutes of taking the brakes off.
Mm-hmm.
But not much longer.
Wow.
Not much longer.
Wow.
So how did you decide to take the brakes off for your new format? You've been restricting yourself to the half hour, and you opened it up.
I'm the challenge queen, so I wanted to challenge myself. It was fun in this format for a while, so I wanted to try something different and see. I wanted to grow. To
what happens in the second half hour?
Not much. Not much. I lied. I you know, this is all a lie. Nothing's happening in the second half hour.
So well, be silent.
There is silence. I because the world is too busy. I think we all need to kind of have a moment of silence. So the second half hour is going to be a food segment. We're going to have an owner of Il Moro Ristorante, a well-known
Italian restaurant.
It's Italian, yes,
mm-hmm.
In L.A., and we're going to talk about food, and, you know, Valentine's Day is coming up. Are you doing something special for your lovely wife?
Usually purple roses.
Oh, what is the name? There's a special name for them. They're lavender. They're silver something, aren't they?
I have no idea. But she doesn't like red.
Well, that's good. Those are hard to find. There's a special name for them. I remember trying to find them. You can't find them many places. Do you have a special place you go to?
Trader Joe's.
Really? They have purple roses?
Yeah.
Wow. I'll have to hang at Trader Joe's. So what would be your most I know you're working on some a new tennis your blog, your tennis blog.
Tennisdiary.com.
Your tennis diary, yes.
I'm doing that, and I'm still doing a Soul Pancake, Rain Wilson's site.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just working on a story for Soul Pancake about sex addiction and how we don't resolve it in one session on a tennis court.
That should be posted.
Yeah, that should be posted on Saturday. And the Tennis Diary, we now have a new home, and we're getting our writers back together, and I'm the owner, or whatever it's called.
You're the owner of Tennis Diary? So where is your new home? Did you have trouble moving?
The umbrella is now Blogwin, but you can just go to tennisdiary.com, and it'll take you right there. You met Donna Ross. She's doing our executive marketing and keeping things together, and
and
the other writers who were writing before are rejoining us. We're having fun.
Having fun.
I posted a story about the boring Australian Open, and one of the other writers posted one how exciting and invigorating it was. So we're enjoying our conflicts.
That conflict is good.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So, what are you working on for Soul Pancake?
I'm re-editing my piece on the sex addiction, a guy who's having trouble being faithful to his girlfriend.
So Tiger, can you give us Tiger is probably listening.
We'll send him a tweet of it.
Yeah, yeah. So how do you deal with that on the court? What would be an exercise?
Well, this particular story is about faith and faithfulness and how difficult it is to remain faithful even to watching a tennis ball. And this guy, I challenged him to stay faithful to the tennis ball for at least 45 seconds, which is not as long as he is faithful to his computer porn. And he lasted for 8 shots on the tennis court, less than 20 seconds, and was humbled by that he realized that he really has to learn something about the pleasure he gets from being faithful. And that's sort of where the story ended, which is I've been exploring doing stories for Soul Pancake that don't have epiphematic endings, where they leave it to be continued.
Oh, I like that.
Well, that was their request, and I am sort of beginning. This is my, as you expanded your show, I'm expanding my show and doing episodic pieces, I think.
It's about the human drama.
Yes.
Well, I think that's very interesting. I would never think to work out faithfulness, but I guess, you know, anything is possible. That's just very interesting. It's very interesting. I so enjoy your format. As I wrote note to myself that what we were going to talk about today is that you are a tennis coach, but you do more than coaching on the court.
Well, and there's more than tennis that people...
More than tennis. So how would you describe what you do that's more than tennis?
People bring their entire selves to the court. There's an opportunity to express themselves shot for shot, and we see what's blocking those shots, and we see what gets them to experience themselves more fully. And that's what I do on the court, help relieve some of those blocks, learn about them, use them rather than be used by them, and play better or play the way they want to play. It took me many years for my own game to understand how much power I had. I had to start to... The obstacle I had was wanting to control the positioning of the ball, and I had to let that go in order to have more power. And it works.
Well, I played a doubles game on Wednesday, and I realized that some of the shot making, I like to play a more competitive game, and I realized that the ego got in the way several times. And it's always a guarantee that when the ego gets in the way, the shot never makes it where you want it to go. It goes in the net, it goes outside the court.
And what was your ego saying? Hit it
better? Put it away, baby. Put it away. Don't be mediocre.
End the point.
End the point. You're a winner.
Be the best.
The little devil. I think I had little horns on my head that came up when the ego came up. Because I always, then I said, oh, crap. Ego, bye-bye. Who invited you? Go shopping.
Well, you said you put your shoulds, you gave them to your friend?
Well, I gave them to... to a friend to hold, because I said I was finding myself going back and using that word in a description that I should do X, Y, and Z, and I said, ho, wait a minute,
Is that your ego?
Probably the expectation of...
So you didn't give your friend all of it?
Well, I told her to hold it and. And to kind of, I guess, to reprimand me if it does show up again. I wanted her to be mindful. I wanted her to make me be aware of it and keep me grounded.
I asked a client many years ago to put her ego somewhere, and I thought that she would just throw it away. And at the end of the session, I said, "So where did you put it?" She said, "In the car." "You're going to take it home?" She said, "Yeah." Even though you played better without it. Yeah, I'm going to take it home. It's my friend.
Well, I don't know. Do you think we could completely live without that ego? I mean, there's
No, the beautiful part of it is desire.
Right.
That we want things.
Yeah.
And then the obstacles are the obstacles are what we put in the way from allowing ourselves to have what we want.
Well, I realize that, like this doubles game that I was playing, that I need to just have that conversation, to be patient, to start the conversation by my serve, and to hear and wait to see what somebody else has to say. Maybe I don't need to say, I'm going to put it away. Maybe somebody else is going to hit it into the net.
Or maybe somebody's going to ask you to keep talking.
Exactly. Well... That rarely never happens. That's why I have a radio show, because I can keep talking. I've never heard anybody say that to me, Lauren. We'd love to hear you talk.
Could you keep talking? Keep hitting the ball in the court?
As I was with a friend today, and I mentioned to you off air that I went trucking, and I'm going to talk about it in the second half of the show, but it felt like, I guess I must have been on the caffeine rush, because I was chatting the entire time. I don't know if I allowed her to get anything in, or she didn't really have anything to say, and I guess I was telling her that I was doing the radio show later today, and I said, this is good practice. I was nonstop chatty Kathy. But as I said to you, we went trucking. You know these roach coaches that have been improved and renovated, and it's all over L.A., and I gather it's all over the country now where you can – You tweet a roach coach. What did I? There was Baby Badass Burgers, India Jones, which was Indian food, and Freshers, which my friend and I ate at, which we had a nice pastrami sandwich. But there's all these roach coaches that have individualized food, and you tweet them, and they tell you where they are, and you go hunt them down, and you eat off the truck. Have you ever done that?
No.
Oh, it was so much fun. And then
is this high end?
No. No. I mean, some of them have only grilled cheese. The baby, the Badass Burgers just has burgers, fries. Each truck has its own specialty. There's a sweet truck, and then you find them every day. They're somewhere different, and they use tweeting to tweet their location out to all these people, and people wait in line for these specialty trucks.
And where was the one you had lunch at today?
We had lunch in Santa Monica behind...
At the Promenade?
No, it was in an industrial area off of 26th and Colorado behind MTV.
Wow.
It was a side street, and then we got our food, and then we ate in the car. It was so much fun.
And
I
you
said,
didn't
oh,
shut
I gotta
up.
Tell everybody. What's that?
And you didn't shut up.
I did, and I said, you know, Lauren, maybe, you know, quiet, it's now quiet, because I didn't hear somebody say to me, Lauren, please don't stop talking. We'd love to hear your voice.
We want you to hit the ball back.
Keep going. Yeah, and I did, and I did. And, you know, I learned a lot about myself, about spontaneity, which I think I am a spontaneous person. My friend said, do you mind driving? I said, no, where are we going? Do you mind driving? As I drove an hour to see her. I said, no, I don't mind driving. So we drove to this area, and it was something I had never done before, and it was just so much fun. There's a whole other world out there, the tweeting, the trucks, barbecue, fun.
Do you think I forgot your next guest's name? You think
Elio DeSanto.
Is he doing the roach coach?
You know, I should tell him that they need to. Well, they. Il Moro is a ristorante and gastro bar. They don't have a roach coach. They've been around for 16 years. They've been around a very long time, and for good reason, because it's very good Italian food, and it's a beautiful. They are located in an office building.
I used to eat there when I was living on the west side.
Yeah, and they have a beautiful patio, and during the warmer weather, it's nice, but it's also nice in the winter months because it's all heated, so it's just lovely. It's quiet, it's peaceful, it's very good. It's very good. And I have to ask him, they used to have jazz there, and I don't know if on Friday nights, I think. So I don't know. That is one of our, you know, something we'll talk about with Elio. So you said that you're going to get your wife purple roses. Does she do anything for you? For Valentine's Day?
Yes. She usually paints me a picture of roses. She's a good artist.
Yeah. Well,
I have a
really
series of Valentine's Day watercolors.
Oh, so her medium is watercolor.
She used to do oil, and then she switched to watercolor, and then she's now thinking about going back to oils.
Well, does she sell her work?
She has sold some of her sculpture, but not...
Oh, she sculpts too. My goodness, how talented.
Yeah.
I don't know if your wife finds this, that sculpting in particular is a very expensive hobby. My brother-in-law is a sculptor, and...
Well, the sculpting isn't the expensive part. It's the
bronzing.
It's the bronzing and time-consuming, and we've done quite a few bronzes.
Actually, my brother-in-law is a selling sculptor. He sold one of his pieces. He resides in the Berkshires up in Massachusetts, so he sold a chess piece, the chess player, I think that's the name of it. And he sell that, the one and only. But I think you'd have to sell an awful lot to recoup the cost of the bronzing and your time and the foundry, all that kind of stuff. But if it's a passion, that it doesn't, it shouldn't really matter. That's wonderful.
Yeah, she loves it.
That's great. That's wonderful. So when are you and I going to get back on the court?
Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m.
9 a.m.
Pacific time.
Pacific time. I can't tomorrow, but I'm going to make another definite date with you because that was fun the last time we were on the. I liked being. What's his name? Who was the gentleman that I played tennis with? Elliot. I was a little Elliot.
Oh, so you were Elliot.
I was Elliot. Yes. Yes. I was little Elliot.
Yes, he loved helping you learn through you being him.
I'm sure he did, because I'm sure he might have been where I was before, or at times he goes back and experiences similar instances. You know, you goof up sometimes.
Yes, we all do.
Oh, it's so mediocre, Zach.
It's so sad.
That's not easy being perfect, is it?
No, but at least you can share that with us.
Yes, at least. Well, Zach, if you'd still like to join me, Elio walked into the radio room yet, so I wanted to tell our viewers a little bit about Il Moro, and welcome to Serious Reservations with Zach and Lauren. It's so nice to have you, Zach, for the second half hour.
What is the? Do you have two titles for the show now?
Well, I wrote a book called Serious Reservations: The Guide to the Dangers of Fine Dining. So this is the little radio segment called Serious Reservations.
But what is the first half called?
It's just a segment. It's the whole show is how to be comfortable in your own shoes.
Shoes in the second
half.
It's
like a little segment. You know, Jay Leno, he has the jaywalking segment. It's just like a little bit. I'm doing a little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit. You
so
know,
what is the most dangerous part of dining?
The bill. that is the most dangerous because you never know the outcome. The most dangerous part of dining. I don't know. In general, what I'm finding about going out is just a lot of mediocre food at a very high price, and people tend to forget about service. But because of the economy and people are not dining out as often or going to the most expensive restaurants anymore, people are starting to have service, which I find very odd when you have a service-oriented business that usually comes with the business, doesn't it?
The restaurants that have been affected by the recession are now focusing more on.
Well, yeah, because they're empty. They're empty. Usually, most people like to eat between 7 and 8 o'clock. Those are the hardest. 7, 7:30, 8, even sometimes 8:30. Those are the hardest reservation times to get. And especially these new places that open up, they want to push and sell that we're packed, you can't get in, and so because everybody wants to eat at that normal dinner hour, they're always telling you we have 6, 6:30, or 10. Didn't you read, there was an article in the LA Times maybe 6 months ago about a restaurant critic that talked about these restaurants and how they prevent people from going there because anytime somebody wants to go at that normal dinner hour, they always say no. And and there's truth to that in the sense that there's so many tables within that 7 to 8 o'clock hour. But they don't.
Are they lying?
Well, they are, because this reporter, she says, oh, I went to this restaurant. This is what I was told when I called to make a reservation. I went at that time. There were empty tables. So I think some of these restaurants do themselves a disservice by pushing people away. They don't. And I rarely hear somebody say, you know, we're busy at that time, but we have a bar. Why don't you come on in, join us for a drink? You might have to wait a few minutes, and then we'll be happy to take you. And I rarely hear that. It's just, no, a lot of people practice sales prevention. We can't take you. And that, oh, the funniest story, I think I did tell you this when I called Pizzeria, I wanted to go to Osteria Mozza, the Mario Batali, Nancy Silverton restaurant. And I had called for a dinner reservation, and I couldn't get through, and then I called another number, and I reached a woman who said, you'll have to call this other number, and I told her that I did, but nobody answered that phone. She says, I'm sorry, I can't help you. So then I finally got through on the other number, and it was the same woman I had called the first time. And I thought, well, there you go. Well, it looks like Elio has come into the radio room. Let's introduce Elio DeSanto, one of the owners of Il Moro, Ristorante Gastrobar. Ciao, Elio.
Hello, ciao, Lauren. I'm sorry I called late.
Hey, you know, not a problem. I'm having a lovely conversation with
Zach. I was eating. I was just, you know, in tune with what you were saying and, you know, with interesting stories.
Yes, and Zach has been a guest at Il Moro in the early years. So so he knows how good the food is.
Yes, I
do. Thank you.
And I'm going to go finish writing my story.
Oh, okay, Zach. Zach, let me just say that I guess if people want to email you at zmetaphorman@juno.com to get some more insight about
the zmetaphorman@juno.com
to get more information about being mediocre.
Thank you.
Thank you, Zach.
Thank you. Have a great time and enjoy your full hour.
I will. Thank you. I will.
Don't stop talking.
I won't.
Goodbye.
Bye. So, Elio, it's so nice to hear you live and in person, and welcome to How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes.
Thank you. Thank you. I like this format. It's cool.
Yeah, it's really nice, isn't it?
I like this interactive kind of sequence where you can be a spectator, you can be a host at the same time. And be a guest.
I know. I feel like we're calling Italy live with this lovely Italian man on the other end. And, you know, I was talking to Zach about Valentine's Day, and he was telling me what he was doing for his wife and what they do for Valentine's Day. And you sent me the Il Moro Valentine's Day menu, and it sounds fabulous.
Thank you. It's good. You know, our chef... Angelo Zarbo is doing a terrific job for us. He's just fresh from Italy, and he had a few stages in the States for a few months, and we were very excited to have him here for a long time now. And so he's really the mastermind behind all our food now. And so we're very excited to propose this over Valentine as well. So...
It sounds nice, and it's a, you know what, it's, what, $65 per person, is that it, for a three-course?
Yes, it is. It's basically a smaller menu in terms of choices, because you still will be able to have choices, like you have three choices of appetizer and five choices of main course and three choices of desserts. So you still have some option to choose from in a very busy night, so we try to be as efficient and bring quality at the table in the same time, in a special night like that.
I know. But being in Italy or having Italian food, that's romantic unto itself. So this would be a perfect place to spend Valentine's Day with a loved one.
Thank you, and I think also the restaurant itself it presents very well for such an occasion. As you know, we have a beautiful patio with an incredible garden with a waterfall and a stream, and the main dining room is like a veranda overlooking such a beautiful patio as well. And we have a beautiful bar and a gastro bar as part of our environment. So it's really a fun place, and still as an area where you can have some privacy and can have a romantic dinner with your loved one.
So what is the difference? Is the menu different in the gastro bar? What is the difference between that and the main dining room?
We offer the same menu everywhere in the restaurant, but at the gastro bar, where there's a little more casual setup, We offer people that come with less commitment, let's say.
I like that term, less commitment, but yeah, more cash,
some,
right?
You can meet with friends, and someone is, you know, without having that, as I said, commitment for a full dinner, you can have a glass of wine, you can have a carpaccio, you can have a pizza, something simple, and you don't feel outcast being there and being in a situation where you feel like you have to order a lot of food, and it's a little more friendly social atmosphere. Even single people may come and sit at the bar and can interact with our bartenders and with the guests while we're doing wine tasting or beer tasting that we do through the week. So it's really an engaging area that a lot of people like for that kind of more relaxed situation. And obviously there's people that like a little more privacy or like to have a certain... A kind of a dinner where they want to have a private room like we do, or they like to be on the patio because they like to have an outdoor experience. So we cover a lot of other things. But the gastro bar, as you asked, is definitely a little more casual spot in the restaurant.
Yes, and speaking of you also have a full bar, so people can have cocktails
of course.
You have a lot of wines by the glass, and your bartender, Charlie, won the best cocktail for his Moro Angelino. That is fabulous.
Yeah, he's doing a great job for us, and he brings his enthusiasm every day, and he transmits his enthusiasm to our customers. And, you know, as we're serious about food, we're serious about drinking. You know, we try to give the best there is to offer to our customers so they can enjoy and not just you know, be enthusiastic about it, so they will remain the cocktail that Charlie eventually fixed for them and become their favorite for a long time.
Is Charlie going to prepare a special Valentine?
I think he will. We don't have yet his recipe with us, but every year he prepares a special cocktail. Last year we had the winning cocktail that he prepared as the one of the special choice for our dining. This year probably he's going to be that one for sure, and also I think he's preparing something new to add to the list. So, and plus, you know, we have a very extensive cocktail list that it's nice to choose from and find your favorites.
You know what, exactly. And, you know, my husband and I, we, instead of sometimes eating, like you were talking about, I asked you about the gastro bar, instead of going to the main dining room of a restaurant, what my husband and I like to do often is to sit at the bar. And you have such a beautiful bar.
That's the thing, is the bar, that's you see, the right thing. You know, we envision the bar as, why we call it gastro bar is simply because we see a place where there is food involved. And in our culture, drinking and eating always go together, even on a casual piece. So we like the kind of situation that you can enjoy and still offer something of a substance or things that are interesting to have at the bar. As a matter of fact, in March we're launching a crudo bar in our gastro bar. And our chef, Angelo Zarbo, is born in Sicily, and basically he brings all the culture of fish and fish cooking with him through, you know, from his early age through his fantastic career as a chef through Europe and Italy and now here in the States with the, you know, he's going to have a kind of a show that he's going to create at the gastro bar. So we're retrofitting part of the bar with a little crudo kitchenette. And so you can try carpaccio di branzino, you can try our tuna tartare, and other fantastic dishes that he is able to create, and with all the lightness and without compromising the quality that the fish has to have to be enjoyed. So that's an extra step we're taking in creating the bar area as a gourmet area, not just the bar.
And crudo, for those listeners, it's raw fish, correct?
It's a raw fish, yes. Not to confuse with, you know, sushi or everything. Italian always had crudo in their diet and menu. And the thing is that we share with the Japanese probably the same love for uncooked fish, raw fish, but obviously it has to be super top quality. It cannot be otherwise. So that's one of the first things that we do. And also, Angelo, in doing the assembling of this crudo, is very particular with even the salt that is used, not just in the crudo, but in all the cuisine we make. For instance, we use three, four different salts. We have salt from France, from England, kind of salt that are natural sea salts that have different qualities and usually are used always on the food in no cooked manner. That means if you have a fish, that we have certain salt we call Maldon, and comes from England. It's a kind of shaped by the wind, and is added to the fish to the very last moment, and it basically doesn't leave that kind of bitter aftertaste that many salt have. This is a more like a clean, a natural flavor that would not compromise the taste of the fish. And for other things we do in the restaurant, like even pasta or salads, we use some salt from France. There are also sea salts. And we always add the salt after the item is prepared. I mean, you have a salad, the dressing is mixed, and then the salt goes in. And the same for the pasta. The pasta is cooked, is about to be served, and then the salt is added to the last moment. So the salt is not never processed, but keeps the quality and will not really create a contamination with the food. It has to just enhance and go with the taste of the food. So all these little things that is like when you get dressed with a beautiful dress, and then you put a bad pair of shoes. Salt is the shoes in this case. You know, you have really to finish off the whole thing with the proper way, because you know that's little particular little things like that at the end will make a big difference.
Of course, I don't think a lot of people. This is a whole new lesson I learned about salt. I had no idea. I know there's.
I mean, that's the thing. We add a little bit, but that's why we love our new chef, because he's someone that makes a lot of research, and through his career, he has really pushed this to the top, and is a new style of cuisine that we really believe, that is simplicity, quality, and his philosophy is he always uses three ingredients that have to tell the story. No more than that, so you don't compromise the quality of what you're using. You know, the taste has to be simple, detected, and enjoyed it. And you should not clash together when they're together.
Well, you want to taste the food. You don't want to taste the sauce. That's
yeah, because you know there's you know many cuisine there is these they use stock and chicken stock a lot of very make food super flavorful, and you think wow this is very tasty, but are artificial flavors. We like to enhance the natural flavors, okay, which are much more delicate. Obviously, that's our challenge, to kind of meet the people that, and a lot of people have you know, diet that prefer not to have this salty content to create taste, and have more the natural content to enjoy food. And it's much more delicate and easy to digest, and it really push your palate to detect quality much more and detect the food you eat. So it's a new direction we're taking, and we like it, we're enjoying it, and we're riding it.
That's very exciting. Now, will Angelo be manning the crudo bar? Is he going to be...
Yeah, he's going to have some assistance, and we want him to be, obviously, the main guy there in the crudo bar. You know, we're planning to do this in the first week of March, and we already have a lot of seafood in our menu as well. We already have crudo. Today we have a fantastic branzino that we had as a special. We ran out of it. Everybody wanted it, and everybody was blown out by it. And we have, you know, like tartare of tuna, of salmon, and it's terrific with the seafood, which is definitely going an extra notch in that direction right now. Even though we have a very balanced menu with meats, pastas, and salads, and soup as ever, but this is definitely something we are really going the extra mile. Obviously, connecting with the best suppliers there is, buying direct from Hawaii and getting the best fish available. Because obviously, to create the quality, you have to start with
exactly.
Purchasing the best quality.
Exactly, and I think that's one thing that LA is missing in its restaurants. There are very few "quote unquote" seafood restaurants that just serve fish. But now that you have a wonderful selection of fish that most people like, salmon, but also some more interesting fish like a sea bass, it's a lovely addition to the menu
In our menu, we have quite a bit of, we have cod, we have salmon, we have tuna, we have swordfish. We always have four or five different kind of fish and shellfish and so on and so on. And try to have, cover a certain area that are, and we're trying to use Zarbo unspoiled quality, because obviously it's new in the States, and not to be compromised with trying to match someone else's cuisine. We like something that has a fresh start, that is innovative, that nobody has. I want to be, kind of a leader in what we do. We don't want to just look over and see what other people are doing and go that direction. We just want to create our own direction based on the belief and the experience that we collect through the years as a restaurateur and working for the best restaurant in L.A. Since Rex downtown in the 80s and so on and so on. So, really, it's a lot of passion and that dictates our direction.
Yeah, and you, how long have you been in the restaurant business?
Since I was 18, traveling through Europe was a means to support myself going in an Italian restaurant where I could use some of my skills because I knew food and I could cook a little bit, I could understand and explain the food. So, it was kind of a casual approach, and then it became a passion in the 80s when I had the luck to meet someone like Mauro Vincenti, a man of great culture and especially culinary culture that he loved, and he was someone that loved super fine food. And introduced the Nouvelle Cuisine in the 80s in California. And from there, a lot of good restaurants were inspired to follow his footsteps. And I think that's where really I felt this is not just a business, a passion, and I embraced it.
So as a restaurateur, when you have a day off, where do you like to go and eat?
Well, to me, it's a lot of a social thing, One is enjoy eating at home, because that's the way I was brought up, and I have, fortunately, a wife that does great cooking. But sometimes I like to go and see friends, and visit friends that have restaurants, so it's an opportunity for me to see them. But other than that, if I want to go out for dinner, I try to go and try different cuisines. Can be Japanese.
Do you have a favorite cuisine? Other
Japanese is one of my favorites, but a good Indian, Mexican cuisine as well as California cuisine. That is kind of a melting pot of all this culture together. But always I'm oriented towards a place that I can be happy with, where I'm going to work out with what my expectation was. And either it's a great place where they get great salads, or a place where they get great fish, or a place where they have the best steak in town. And so I don't really have a favorite, but, sometimes I miss my Neapolitan pizza. I'm from Napoli, so I go and see my dear friend Pepe, who happened to be also the president of Era Pizza Napolitana in the States.
Does he still have his restaurant in the marina?
He is still in the marina, and good news for him, the pizza Napoletana was granted from European Community as a protected recipe, and so basically has been recognized as a recipe that can need to be protected. In order to claim that you have a pizza Napoletana, you have to have certain items and technique used to achieve that. So that's one of the things I enjoy doing it, and it's a simple food. And we also have a terrific pizza, but it's Emilia-Romagna style. It's a much more lighter. It's more an appetizer-style pizza, and it's typical of Emilia-Romagna. It's a kind of very thin, so doesn't support like heavy topping. It has to be a very delicate topping, but it's delicious, and it's also available del Moro. You don't need
of a thin crusted pizza?
Yes.
Yeah. I love that thin crust.
And we do with the fresh
porcini. Do you have a
pizza oven
now?
We do, but it's not a wood oven. It's just a gas oven. So we had it for the last couple of years, and it's a terrific pizza, and it's an alternative to the pizza I love, but I still love our pizza as well.
Oh, nothing like a good Italian pizza and a nice glass of wine.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
That sounds good to me. Now, I know you used to have some jazz in the lounge area on Friday nights. Are you still doing that?
We used to have it. We kind of, because of transformation that we were occurring and a little down turn in economics, we felt to stop that to make sure that we keep the quality people at work. We had to cut some corners. Unfortunately, that's something I miss a lot. But hopefully, you know, in the near future, we'd like to add that menu again. We do it once in a while, like we have a private party or something like that. We invite some musician, because I think that's the other things we have been doing here at El Moro, to connect with artists in the city, not just musicians, but painters and photographers. We do art show on Sundays, and we always host a new artist. And it's a great way of bringing energy in our location, and as well to network with the number of people that are associated with art. And so we like to have the kind of feel around us. I think it's a restaurant is not just a place to eat; it's a place to enjoy and live and meet and fill up with energy. So it's a place where we spend a lot of time. We try to make it a quality time for ourselves and our guests.
So on Sunday, is it just paintings and art, or is it performance?
We do
art,
every so often we have a new guest, artist, have a painting. So we throw a party for them. And the latest artist that we have at the restaurant right now, she's planning to have her posted art right away, but because it was through the holiday season, she preferred to do her art show a little later. And as soon as we are ready for that, we always send an email blast for people that do enjoy this kind of event. And I welcome anybody that like to be on our list on our website. There is a way of subscribing to our newsletter. And then in our website, we also list the event we do have. And at the moment, we have this artist that is showing with us, is Jeanette Botnet. And she does she has incredible quality and is an incredible artist. And it's fun to have fresh art once in a while. What happens when an artist moves out, is like missing one of your kids is leaving.
I know.
Then the new artists come in, and then you get attached to your new baby.
That's
great. So it's this mixed feeling, but it's a great feeling, even for a customer that come in often, and they attach to art, and they don't realize till the art is gone. I say, what is that art? What happened? You know, and
what's missing?
What's missing? Something is missing in my life, and then they realize there is new art around them. You know.
Well, Elio, I have so enjoyed our chat that this 30 minutes has just flown by, and I am so hungry. I'm coming in for a pizza and a glass of wine with you. But
hey,
I want to give
welcome.
Out the information so people can call and make their Valentine's Day reservations at Il Moro. They can call 310-575-3500. 630, or they can go to your website. Which
they
is
can even make a web reservation through our website and find all of the information about the menu and all the things that are of interest to the for
yes.
them.
And that your website is www.ilmoro, I-L-M, as in Mary, O-R-O, .com, ilmoro.com, for all this fascinating information. And Elio, thank you so much for being on the show. It was lovely having you, and I look forward to eating at Il Moro very soon.
Thank you, Lauren. I appreciate it, and I had a good time chatting with you.
Okay. Ciao, bello.
Ciao, bellissimo. Bye.